Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
We're in a situation that we haven't dealt with in modern times.
The pandemic here has really accelerated the investments that we've been advocating for years.
From a macro standpoint, I think our sport industry is really forced to look at the business a little bit differently.
In-depth conversations with the leaders in the sports industry.
Esports is a good aberration. We're still moving forward.
We're part of something much bigger than sport right now. The health and safety of our stakeholders is what's most important.
Every moment, I think we're all, from a business perspective, thinking about the impact that the virus is having across the country.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. Over the next hour, we will explore the big money issues in the world of sports and talk to some of the biggest players in the industry.
And a lot happening in the world of sports, as there always is, business and sports colliding. Later on, we're going to talk with Todd Leiwicki. He is running the Kraken. They are debuting in the NHL. But one of the things that we've got to talk about, guys, that really broke out this week was the world of crypto. We talk about it all the time across all the platforms at Bloomberg, and yet it seems to be finding a foothold in the world of sports for fans, teams, and players alike. A month ago, we talked to Dave Cavill. He was talking about Bitcoin being something he would accept for luxury suites. He wasn't quite sure what was going to happen next. Well, we found out what's happening next this week, because Dogecoin, good Lord, we've heard so much Dogecoin this week across all of Bloomberg. They're now using that, accepting that, I should say, to buy seats for Oakland A's games. Pretty amazing, and I feel like this is a breakout moment, Lynchy.
I think so as well. We hear it more and more every single day. Now, some teams are a little bit reluctant. Some teams are very skeptical about this cryptocurrency. But Oakland seems to be diving in. Players are, as we know, we heard from some individual players. Rob Gronkowski, the tight end for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, has an 80% return in the last 2 months. His $1.8 million investment in Ether is now worth over $3.3 million. And he says, I'm holding.
Yeah, well, don't sleep on Gronk. The enthusiasm, we should say, guys, is not universal. Steve Pagliuca, of course, one of the co-owners of the Boston Celtics, isn't quite convinced.
Personally, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around Bitcoin being a viable currency. I see blockchain as extremely valuable, but Bitcoin's going to have to go a long way to go to be accepted in lots of places.
You know, Michael Barr, we also heard, and we always look at sponsorships and what deals teams are doing. The New York Football Giants, they've got their first cryptocurrency partner, Grayscale Investments. And when these companies start to get in front of the fans, I mean, they're going to be a game day sponsor. They're sponsoring several other elements of the Giants. You know that they feel like there's a market there.
I'm trying to get my mind around cryptocurrency in general. Remember when cash was king? What happened? What did I miss here? Dogecoin was supposed to be a joke, and look at what has happened now. So yeah, the Giants they're partnering with a cryptocurrency partner, and this is, I guess, going to be the future.
I mean, it certainly is going to be the future, I think, or it certainly feels that way right now, Lynchy. You know, when you think about, you know, cash is king and how we went to credit cards, and the evolution is so fast around crypto. I think one of the interesting things to consider is that there are all these different forms of it, but part of it is about security. Part of it is about, you know, changing value. And listen, everybody's in this to make a buck in many ways. If you're a team or an athlete or a league, it'll be interesting to see how regulation comes on here, but certainly it's being taken up in a big way.
Yeah, I remember our conversation midweek with Noel LaMontagne of Verdant Capital Advisors in L.A., a former player for the Cleveland Browns. And he was still very, very skeptical in his advising his clients to jump into cryptocurrency. But sometimes, as he says, the locker room can be a great place for camaraderie, but it can be a bad place for financial advice. And that's his big worry about professional athletes.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we talk to a lot of wealth advisors who are advising athletes about their portfolios, and crypto is something that's coming up over and over and over again in the sports world and in the celebrity world, and you know, increasingly now into the everyday space. Well, speaking of which, you know, athletes are getting a lot smarter about how they manage their money. They are much more sophisticated when it comes to their investments. Richard Sherman, heard of him, Seattle Seahawks standout. He spoke with Matt Miller over in Germany about how he is thinking about preserving wealth.
It's going to continue to evolve. And I think that's a testament to more players asking more questions, getting more financially literate, more educated, putting their pride aside. I think sometimes you come into a space and it's human nature. You know, you've never had things. You've lived paycheck to paycheck, barely making ends meet your whole life. And then you get this huge sum of money and you're able to do all the things you dreamed of doing as a kid. And I think it's human nature, and it's unfortunate because a lot of the kids in the National Football League and the NBA and in the leagues that players and players of color go to, it changes everything. And I think now they're not just looking at the short answers. Everybody's looking more long term and finding long term solutions and hearing that, hey, this money needs to last, whether it's $100,000 or $100 million. Like, you need to find a way to continue to accumulate wealth, continue to go out and find a way to take this money, take this nest egg, and create more wealth and more opportunities. And I think in sports, people are using their names and likeness rights to create more opportunities, more stakes in companies, gaining equity, ownership stakes. You see that predominantly in the NBA, you know, with players like Steph Curry and KD and Draymond. You know, they've been in Silicon Valley making huge waves. You see it with LeBron James. In NFL, you're starting to see it, you know, with the quarterbacks. Obviously, it's always going to start there, taking equity in these companies and really, really changing the game. And I think all those factors are influencing the younger generation to say, maybe I should look at this different. Maybe I should think about this money different. And I think it's going to continue to evolve and continue to get better. And I'm happy to hear that.
So, Lynchy, this is a theme. We talk about this all the time on this show. We talked with an advisor, a former NFL player, earlier in the week. You can check out that podcast. Verdant Capital Management is the firm. And, you know, this is what they do. This is big business, and it's an increasingly big business because it's not just, hey, I'm going to endorse this car dealership, or I'm going to endorse this watch, or I'm going to endorse this cereal. These are investment stakes these guys are taking, and that has utterly changed the landscape, and they're doing it while they're playing, maybe even before they get into the league, when they're in high school or college, starting to think about where they're putting their money.
All of them have an itch, and some of it needs to be scratched long after their playing days are over. Some are done when their playing days are over. And I applaud these guys. I never had great vision beyond what was going to happen tomorrow afternoon, and a lot of these guys do. And you look at LeBron James and so many other players. Michael Jordan's back in the game right now, and LeBron is still active, as you say, and he's already thinking and already planning for his post-playing days.
Today, delighted to be speaking with the CEO and president of the Seattle Kraken, Todd Leiwicki. So, Todd, really good to spend some time with you. Guessing you're tired of all the release the Kraken jokes, but you should have anticipated that. It's an awesome name, I have to say. Give us the state of play here. Obviously, it's all happening now.
It is. And, you know, I've been on the case 3 years now. I had lived in Seattle. I ran the Seahawks for 7 years and helped get the Sounders going, and then left And then my brother, who is, he's prolific at many things. You know, he was developing his company, the Oakview Group, OVG, and Seattle was the largest city in the U.S. without a winter sports team. No NBA, no NHL, and significantly due to the fact that they just couldn't solve the Rubik's Cube of how to fix an arena. And the public was, and public officials were saying, hey, we're not going to put public money into this again. So it was, it was a standoff, and it was tough because a lot of events that should have come to Seattle didn't. It's a great music town. Lots of music events just skipped because the building was really dysfunctional for music. And then the Sonics left, and I was running the Seahawks, and to see an NBA team leave a town this vibrant was just shocking. So my brother responded to the city's RFP. He put forth an incredible, bold vision that said he could hold that roof up, a 40-million-pound roof, while you built a new arena under it. And then, as he was awarded the RFP and came to a memorandum of understanding, he would call me every other hour saying, you need to leave the NFL and come back home and take the bull by the horns. And that's what we did. So it's really been a thrilling ride over these last 3 years.
You're going to be compared, obviously, to the Vegas Golden Knights, who came in 4 years ago in their first year in the league and went to the Stanley Cup Finals. Have you studied their blueprint at all for their success, or are you pretty much on your own and we're going to do things a different way?
No, I think that we've not only studied it, we've admired it. George McPhee is a longtime friend of mine. Kerry Buchholz, their president. And they did, I think many people on the front end of that said, really, hockey in Las Vegas? And it proved to be an amazing success. George has made all the right decisions. Bill Foley has done a terrific job. But one of the things that I think defines sports in America, and I think globally, but certainly in North America, are how teams are positioned to give back and be there to support community. We've certainly done that during COVID, so we admire what they've done. We've learned from a lot of what they've done, but we've got to do it on our own here, and we've got to do it in a Seattle-centric kind of way, and I think we're poised to do that.
So talk to us about that, Todd, because, as well or better than almost anyone what it takes to bake a team into the fabric of a city. You've done it there in Seattle before. You've done it in other markets as well. And part of that is ensuring that you get the right companies behind you, the right sponsorships, the right community engagement from a fan perspective. So walk us through the playbook there.
I mean, in the purest forms, we build the brand, and the brand feels so good that partners want to tap into that brand equity to build their brands. But that's actually a two-way street. And so having the right partners can really also build your brand. But there had to be a base premise and a base promise to those partners of what we were going to build. And for us, that was one of the most beautiful arenas in the world, and it's going to be. It is just spectacular. It scales. It's subterranean. It's in a park. The historic roof gives instant soul to the project. So the arena events, so we're going to be busier. We're going to be one of the busiest concert venues in North America. The promise of the team and fandom, the fans here have been incredible. But then there's other values you have to stand for. And I'll give you an example for us is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we built from day one, we committed to building one of the most diverse staffs in all of sports. And today, 46% of our staff are women, and 26% of our staff represent BIPOC leaders. And so, I think people say, hockey, really, diversity? Yeah. Well, we have a terrific staff. I think it's a high-performance organization, but they represent, and it's something I'm so proud of because I love the game of hockey. Hockey needs more diversity, and we feel like we're really playing an important role in that.
Trying to play sports in a COVID world, and what's important for any team, NHL, NFL, whatever, is getting bodies in the seats, fans, to watch the sport. How can you guys do it, and how do you plan to do it safely?
Well, you know, we're listening every single day to leaders in the medical field, you know, leaders here in the state who are advising us and trying to give us insights as to what's coming. I think these facilities, our facility for sure, is going to have policies and procedures relative to cleaning and air filtration that are substantially enhanced, but serve their own purpose beyond COVID. And, but I, you know, we do have one other group we listen to, and it's the people who have bought tickets. And we're sold out for next year. I think we'll be sold out for years to come. And they have voted. They want to get back. They want to get into an arena. They want to cheer a team. They want to be with neighbors. They want to celebrate community. And they have been unwavering this entire journey. March 1st, 2018, 32,000 depositors put money down. You know, and they accepted 32,000 depositors because they thought there'd be some fallout. There wasn't a whole bunch. We ended up taking full season tickets and splitting them. And I don't know that any team, any expansion team has ever done that. We took 4,500 season tickets and cut them down the middle to try and, you know, meet the demand. And even that, we didn't get everyone seated. So the fans have spoken. They want to get back. They want to cheer. And I think they believe that by the time we drop the puck in the fall, sometime in October, that our world will be returning to some normalcy.
So, Todd, talk to us about Seattle as a sports fan's paradise in many ways. So, Todd, talk to us about Seattle from a sports fan's perspective. From that vantage point, you've seen this from a lot of different perspectives, the demographics, the characteristics of the Seattle fan. It's a fast-growing, affluent fan base. There is something a little bit different about the vibe that you know better than anyone. Tell us about it.
Well, I just love fandom and understanding it and studying it. And, you know, and I'd say in my career, the greatest privilege I've had is serving the fans. And that's really what I believe we do. And when I came here with the Seahawks, I felt that these were, you know, there was a different kind of fan here. And I think to really understand fandom, you do have to look at it almost in its broadest form, look generationally. And, you know, in the day, this was a long way away from the rest of the United States, and it was kind of the last stop. And people who came here were different, and that held true. Lots of different companies were incubated here. And then, you know, this World's Fair happened here, and the city leaders moved, you know, heaven and earth to facilitate a World's Fair right in the heart of the city. That's when the Space Needle was built. That's when our arena roof was born. But that World's Fair focused on future. It focused on technology. So you have a really unique spirit here. But people like belonging here, and they're willing to give up wherever they're from. They're willing to kind of drop that hometown jersey at the border of the state and belong. And they belong to the Mariners and the Sounders and the Storm. And they're going to belong to, you know, the Kraken.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Todd, you got a lot of expenses, the expansion fee, the rebuilding the arena, training facility, et cetera, et cetera. What does the new TV deal with ESPN and Turner mean for your club in this first year with all those big expenses?
Gary Bettman's the longest serving commissioner of Major League Sports. I think he's just done a terrific job of the league. I think the game today is a really beautiful game, the way it's played. I think he's done a great job with these two expansion teams. And I think he did a great job with the broadcast deals. To be back on ESPN is really thrilling. I've been a hockey fan my whole life. The opening, you know, jingle, the opening music for ESPN, NHL on ESPN, you know, to hear it again was just like fantastic. We're going to play it in the arena and we're going to honor it. But then, you know, to go to Turner and create a partnership there. So a lot of people focused on the dollars, and certainly there was a hefty increase in rights fees. But for me, more than that, it's these two partners who are really committed to the storytelling, to showcasing the league like it deserves. And I'm super excited.
You know, Todd, you've got a couple of high-profile owners, more than a couple, involved here. You yourself are a minority owner, I believe, of the club. And you also have David Bonderman, who is the majority owner, a very well-known private equity investor and philanthropist, Jerry Bruckheimer. We've seen many of his movies. It's a fascinating ownership group in many ways at a time when there are a lot of interesting and different people coming into this sport and coming into ownership in general across all major sports. Tell us about this ownership group, what the vibe is, what you think is different and unique here.
Well, David Bonderman's different and unique, yep. That's for sure.
to say the least.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this, but he's a remarkable person. And I didn't know him very well. He didn't know me very well, but we built a great relationship. But he and Jerry Bruckheimer had really been looking, and Jerry's a lifelong hockey fan. He grew up in Detroit.
Yeah.
He moved to L.A. and he still followed hockey, but at some point in time, number of years ago, he started skating again, and his passion for the sport is pretty intense. And Jerry can do anything he wants. He can go to any event he wants, but he loves the game of hockey. And so he and Bondo looked. They actually looked early on in Las Vegas. They looked other places, but it was when they connected with my brother Tim and said, hey, Seattle's the place. And so they were really the two guys that got this going. The family that owns the Space Needle, the Wright family. Dave Wright is a significant investor. Andy Jassy, who's CEO of Amazon. I knew Andy Nguyen when he was just CEO of AWS, but
right.
Andy Jassy is one of my favorite guys in the whole world. He's just a true blue guy. And when you go on a journey like this, it's not for the faint of heart. Our investors, I think, are having the time of their lives, and to be able to do this, to bring a team here to fix the arena, and then at some point in time, I do believe the NBA comes. It's really, for many of them, an incredibly wonderful and fulfilling journey, and, for me, I want to win the cup.
Todd, something that stood out to me, I noticed that your local television broadcast network, you've expanded into Alaska. What went into that thinking?
Well, that was something else that was important to us. When I was here during my tenure with the Seahawks, I fell in love with Alaska and traveled up there a lot on business, but also catching release, salmon fishing, and just seeing what is, the Serengeti of North America. It's an amazing place. So when we were granted our territory, we really pushed pretty hard that we wanted Alaska to be a part of it. Lo and behold, we were given the territory, and lo and behold, one of the things we realized this year was that the University of Alaska in Anchorage, facing massive budget cuts due to oil and other challenges with the state budget, a 42-year program was about to end. And so we jumped in. There's a $3 million campaign that's ongoing right now to save the Seawolves hockey program, and I am now super optimistic that that program is going to be saved. And it's a fantastic opportunity because we don't, just ordain, hey, you're part of our territory, you're now Kraken fans. You have to earn it. And so the chance to earn it was such a significant issue right there in front of us was terrific. I'm headed up there in 2 weeks. We're going to rally the business community a little bit more, but it's the people on the ground that are doing it.
Would you ever think about taking a game on the road up to Alaska?
Wouldn't it be fantastic? And so, Mystery Alaska, Howard Baldwin's movie was that premise.
Yeah.
But I think that could be a spectacular one-time event. I think really what we want to create is day in and day out engagement. The other thing, taking a game up there is a logistical issue, and the Sullivan Arena, the logical arena, is actually an Olympic sheet of ice. But, part of why I'm going up there is to better understand their facilities. But for sure, we can honor the game, all that Alaska has contributed to the great game of hockey in our building, and we're intending on doing that this year.
Todd, you dropped a little crumb earlier that I want to pick up, which is about the NBA and the tale of the Sonics. There have been podcasts, books, articles, many late night, I'm sure, sessions in bars lamenting that team and what happened there. What needs to happen to get the NBA back?
Well, pretty simple. You got to have an arena that's capable of hosting a team and generating economics commensurate with NBA teams, and we've done that.
Yeah,
this arena is going to be absolutely perfect. Everything is built out. The economic model is built out. Some have said, well, the hockey team took all the economics. Not true. We built this so that NBA team can come in, plug and play in one of the most beautiful arenas in the world, and also enjoy unfettered economics. And so we've been deliberate about it from day one. I feel it's part of the pledge that was made to the city when we said we would do this. And we won't rest until the NBA is back in Seattle.
You know, Todd, given your experience across all the pro sports, I got to ask you, because we've all been talking about it, and I'm guessing you have as well, given your intimate knowledge of ownership and management of teams, and as you say, you know, studying fan bases and fan behavior, Super League. I mean, unbelievable to watch from the sidelines. As someone who knows that sport, the sport of soccer/football, intimately, as someone who understands ownership and fans, as I said, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, first, you were trying to get something organized across, you know, different countries, different cultures. And I think that you were also trying to do it in the midst of a global pandemic. And so, you know, when I look at it, you know, economics do drive lots of big ideas. And so you can see the economic idea there, that we're going to get the top teams. And, you know, that's actually what's happened in sports. The NFL is the top and the NHL is the top. Soccer didn't have that distinct pyramid, so they made a run at it. I think the COVID world perhaps kept them from truly understanding what public sentiment might be. Mm. And, you know, I think that fans do rule the day. And the fans spoke. They spoke decisively. When the government spoke, those were also fans within government speaking. You know, that passion is what fuels sport. And so I think even those who might have been on the losing side of that debate, those who were the promoters, can take comfort that the passion for those teams is alive and well. And the fans do feel as though emotionally they own those teams. And that's really what the whole thing's about.
Well, Todd, thank you so much. It was really great to catch up with you. You know, it's such a fun, wide-ranging conversation, given your fun and wide-ranging career. A lot to look forward to, it sounds like, there in Seattle with the Kraken released, as it were. And I can't wait to see all the events that you're able to put together. And I think we all know, as sports fans, that the Seattle fans, as you said, are a special breed in many ways. And I'm especially taken by what you said, that a lot of people show up there and sort of leave their previous hometown allegiances aside. There's a fervor in that city that is really something to behold. So best of luck. We really appreciate it.
And listen, the only way for you guys really to experience it is to come on out. So
yeah.
I'm hereby inviting you guys to come out, see a game. You'll be my guest. I'll buy you dinner and a beer after the game. You know, you get out of the studio and get some fresh air and come out and see us play.
Wow. Absolutely.
I'm lacing up my shoes right now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Googling plane tickets.
My goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
All right,
here
gang.
We go.
You know what it's time for. The fabulous number of the week. Now, you remember when Lynchy said that he had to get in my head? And that's how he was figuring stuff out. Now, he probably thought the question was going to be about New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft. He bought a house in the Hamptons in an off-market deal for $43 million. Oh, no, Lynchy.
Oh, boy.
That's not your question.
Uh-oh.
Now, this one. Now, I'll be a little serious about this here. The great Bobby Unser, one whale of a racing driver, he passed away this week at age 87. He was a three-time winner of the Indianapolis 500. He won it in 1968, 1975, in 1981. What I'm asking you guys, what was Bobby Unser's share for winning the 1968 Indy 500?
What was the purse? His share of the purse?
His share of the purse. Now, if you want a clue, I can give you the purse.
That would be great.
I'm going to give you the purse. The purse was $712,269. That's the purse.
So that's the total.
Total. What I want is, what did he take away as the winning check?
Out of 712, I'm glad you gave me that, because God knows what I would have guessed without that guidance. Let's say $250,000.
I think that's high. I'm going to go $100,000.
Well, it's $175,139.
Okay.
And I think if I'm doing the math quickly, actually, you went over. Well, Jason, you went over, but you were closer.
Hey, this is not Price is Right. When I want to win, it's not Price is Right. That's how I said it.
Hold on. I'm reaching into my sock. I'm throwing the red challenge.
Yeah, exactly. What's funny is he said 100,000. I said 200. It was like dead in the middle.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That was pretty good.
That's good. Well, I mean, I wonder what we could do a quick calculation, which I will not do because I'm not in front of my trusty Bloomberg terminal at the moment. I mean, that's still a pretty good payday in like 2021 dollars.
Yeah, it's in this is 1968.
Yeah,
and I mean that was very good. So it was. By the way, that car. If anybody is a fan of Paul Newman,
the
car that Bobby Unser drove was the centerpiece in the movie Winning. That was the car. So when you see that car, that's the one that Bobby Unser drove.
Well, there you go. All right. Little history. I mean, learned so much history in this episode. I mean, between Bobby Unser and Paul Newman and the, you know, Spanish influenza affected season of the National Hockey League, you know, Lynchy reaching deep, you know, drawing some historical parallels for the Seattle Kraken. Listen.
Here's a deep one on the Indy 500 track. There's a golf course inside the track.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Nine-hole
golf. Have you played it?
Yeah. No, but when the Patriots played the Giants, they had the media party at the 500 at the racetrack.
Yeah.
And so we were in the pagoda having Hamburg sliders and sodas, and then they let us all go down to the finish line and bend down and take our picture kissing the bricks.
Got it. And you were like, I don't need to kiss the bricks, but can I go just tee off real quick? These bricks are cool.
If it wasn't 9 o'clock at night, I would have been over with my golf clubs playing in the plane.
Why does Lynchy have sand in it?
Yeah, exactly. Is that turf? What's happening here? Well, you've been listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We're here each and every week right here at the same time, plus online wherever you get your podcasts. Those drop on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm Jason Kelly. Find me on Twitter in the meantime at Jason Kelly News.
And someone please let me know if my protest is going to be upheld. I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at LynchyWCBB.
And I would have licked the bricks. Well, let's see if that stays in the show. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports and Bloomberg Radio around the world.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.